gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. This is the Horror Connection. I'm your host, Tony Viejo. With me, as always, is Sir Michael Blinsky. Mike, how are we doing today?
I'm doing pretty well, sir. And yourself?
I'm doing fantabulous, darling. All right, so I watched a series of movies this week.
Yes.
An anthology, kind of, sort of.
Sort of, yeah.
Well, it's one story, but three separate ways of, I don't know.
Yeah.
I dug it.
So first off, what do you think of this release strategy of like an instant franchise?
I'm for it.
Okay.
But I would do it over a couple months.
You wouldn't do a week apart?
No, I would do, hold on. They're released a week apart?
A week apart.
Okay. Yeah, why not? That's fine. Yeah, that's good. Give me no time to digest and think about it.
Yeah, it was like, and they had a screening of each one like the week before they hit Netflix, and then they would hit Netflix then the next week, so on. Yeah.
I absolutely dug them. It was different.
Yeah.
Oh, everything was comfortable, and I dug it. So the series was The Fear Street.
Yes.
It was 1994, 1978, and 1666.
Correct.
All fun. Like,
yeah.
You told me people had a problem with the third one. Incubator Progeny, I talked about that when I came home from work today. Not the problem that you addressed, but right. Problems that we had with it. I really dug the first one. I like how they set the story.
Yeah, I think the first one is my favorite. I really enjoyed the second one, too. The third one was a step down for me, but I didn't hate it. And I've seen a lot of negative reviews of it.
Real quick, I just want to add, since this is a newer series that's out, so there's going to be a lot of spoilers.
Yeah,
so if you haven't watched this yet, yeah. You want to listen to this, tons of spoilers, because we're not going to do a spoiler-free review and then spoiler it, and it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's not that kind of show. But because most of the things you review are at least 20 years old, so I always feel like if you've seen it, that's the reason why you've found us.
I mean, to be fair, these are based off books that came out in the 90s.
This is true. Now, real quick, do you think that Netflix just has like a mall, like a 90s mall lot?
That they just built that for it?
Like, you know, well, they had from the question. Stranger Things set.
Yeah, that I wonder if it is from that.
Now Cobra Kai.
Yeah, that is a good question because I was watching. There is some. They posted some like behind the scenes stuff, which was pretty interesting. But it didn't talk about the mall, so that is a good point because that was a very 90s mall. Like,
yeah,
even the layout and everything like isn't the way a mall would be now.
Yeah,
so it's not like they just redressed an existing mall. So it had to be a set.
Like, and that's the thing. Like, you know, you don't just have software, et cetera, neons for one thing.
Yeah,
like there's.
You know what? Now that I'm thinking of it, so I recently watched another Netflix thing, Daybreak,
right.
Where a part of that takes place in the mall. I feel like it's the same mall now that you say it, because I'm thinking of the layout.
Are they Hammer Studioing this?
I think they are. I bet they built a giant mall set for Stranger Things, and they were just like, what the fuck else can we set in a mall?
All Netflix.
Yeah,
all Netflix just planning on the nostalgia of something with the mall.
Yeah, because there's a mall that's definitely a set in Daybreak. Yeah. And I'm almost, now that I think about it, I'm like, it's the same fucking layout.
Yeah.
There's some, you know, the dressing of it is different, but it's the same layout.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that Netflix built a mall somewhere.
Tiffany's
and just like,
Tiffany's just stuck in there pounding on the glass.
Buy up properties with malls in them.
Yeah. That's Netflix Studios. There's malls. It's great. And inside one of the rooms in the mall is just a green screen. They film everything else for said movie.
I like it.
Yeah, but no, I really dug this. I thought it was a fun tale. Very refreshing.
Now, to give some people some background, have you read the books?
I did not grow up reading the books. Okay. Although the guy who was my friend growing up, living across the street, his sister read the books. So I was familiar with the covers. And I was familiar with like what we were, I was like the teen romance aspect of it, which I wasn't, it's weird. The first episode, the girl on girl teenage lesbian relationship felt kind of forced on me, but every other incarnation of it didn't.
Yeah.
Like the first
I agree with that.
The first time around, I was like, this feels forced.
Yeah. And I'll get into a little bit of that later because I have thoughts on that too.
Yeah.
There's a thing that happened, though, speaking of romance. I don't know if you picked up on this. In each of the movies, and the person that I live with was watching this with me. She read the books.
Okay.
I didn't read the books. I saw the covers, just like you.
Yeah.
As a kid, I was like, I don't read. But I read the first book leading up to this. And what they did, they didn't adapt specific books because there's 100 books in the main series,
yeah,
and then there's spinoff books. Now, before you get crazy, the books are like 120 pages each. So they're not like they're
adult goosebumps. They're older teenage goosebumps.
Yeah. They're a serialized goosebumps type thing. So they're not very long, but there's over 100 of them. And then there's spinoff books and everything. So it's like 150 or something like that total. So I did read one of them just to kind of get an idea of what the tone of it was like. And this is the tone of them. So they did totally nail that. And what they did was they just kind of set this in the world of the books because they are semi-anthology style,
from
my understanding of it. So it's just about the town, the overarching story of the town as a whole. And then each book introduces new killers and victims and things like
that. What was it? Shady Dale?
Shadyside.
Shadyside and Somerville?
Yeah. And Sunnydale?
Sunnydale.
I think so. We're going to go with that.
Shadyside and Sunnydale.
Yeah, right. Sounds right.
So, it's a tale of two towns.
Yes.
It's a tale of oldest time. Tale of two towns, rivalries. They can't stand each other. They're always going at it, back and forth, getting in there, going back and forth, getting at it, you know, getting in the mix.
Fisting.
Do
you ever fist anybody?
No.
You thought about that a long time.
I did.
I feel like I would know right off the top of my head if I fisted somebody.
A lot of blackout sex now.
Neither have I. I have weird, like, big hands, though. So I
you do
like
have gigantic. No, your arms are freaking. I have tiny, like,
dance. Yeah, no, I have, like, big monster.
Yeah, you do.
Hands,
I wouldn't so want to. Like, I remember, like, when I first met you, I was like, I don't want Mike to punch me in the face.
Yeah, I have, like, big hands. I would imagine.
I was like, even if you didn't know how to throw a punch, that's going to hurt.
I don't care how small your hands are, fisting cannot be comfortable.
It's those kind of things that make me weird it out. Like, I don't understand how people enjoy that. And, like, what's to prevent you from, like, opening up and making, like, hand puppets in there?
Right. Because I would, and that's the kind of thing I would do.
I'd be trying to make Abe Lincoln's hat.
I'd be like, don't high-five their organs. But then I'd have to. I'd be like, can I, though?
And that's where we brought that up because of the curling iron scene in Sleepaway Camp. Iconic.
There's also a fisting scene in Caligula, so.
There is.
Yeah. Which is getting a re-release.
Nice.
Completely different cut of the movie using no footage from the previous cuts.
Okay.
They shot so much stuff for the movie that they're now piecing together a new cut of the movie using none of the footage that people have seen.
Is that a wise decision?
I don't know. Yeah. It's interesting.
Or is it just stuff that was shot from different angles?
No. So a lot of it, they said there is some of that, but most of it, they said, is deleted scenes.
I believe that. Because, like, back in the day, you built all those sets and all that shit. You just didn't shoot your whatever,
right.
You know.
Yeah, they just shot for months on end for that movie, too. Because that was a movie where they kept changing the script and different people decided they were taking over the movie.
You love Caligula.
I do.
Yeah.
It's a good movie. Yeah. So it doesn't surprise me that there's just hours of unused footage sitting around from that. There definitely would be. So I'm curious.
Because you want to see fisting.
I mean, I already saw the fisting, so if none of those scenes are in it, I'm assuming there's no more fisting to be had, but you never know. Fisting can pop up anywhere.
Really?
I feel like you could. You'd be watching a show with your kids.
It's not like Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, where tomatoes just roll out after you. I don't think fisting just like, you know, it's a random fisting appears.
Like, I don't think it's surprise fisting.
It's not like the Spanish Inquisition.
But I think they're going to ease into it. Like, you'll be watching a kid's show, and they're just kind of, like, sitting and talking, and the one guy just, like, pulls out a thing of lube and starts greasing his hand up.
As someone who watches a plethora of PBS, this has not happened. Maybe this happens in the world of Peppa Pig, but let me tell you something. This does not happen.
Things get edgy on Peppa Pig.
This is not happening on Molly of Denali, where we learn about Alaska.
Peppa Pig is distributed by the same company that distributed Amateur Porn Star Killer.
This is true.
I mean, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes in Peppa Pig.
Oh, man. So,
But speaking of weird sex stuff, so each of these films, if you didn't notice, has a scene where a significantly older character has some sort of sexual encounter with a much younger character, and that caught me by surprise a little bit, and is in each of the films.
The one in the first one,
the younger brother and the sister's friend.
Okay.
And then the age gaps just get bigger. Because in the second one, it's a camp counselor in a children's camp and one of the kids, which they at least comment on in that one. Because one of the other ones is
my first
like,
year
hey.
As a counselor, and it's your last year as a camper. So, like, yeah. it's whatever.
But they at least kind of comment on that one. Yeah. And then in the third one, you have the much older gentleman. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And, yeah, the chick.
Yeah. I felt like I wasn't sure if there was some sort of commentary happening there or if the director, she was just like, I like fucking huge age gaps. Let's put that in there and see if we can freak
people out. Like we said a second ago, like that the opening lesbian part was like a little unsettling for me. I was like, okay.
I feel like my problem with it in the first one, it does feel more natural in the other ones.
It does.
I feel like they set it up to be shocking in the first one.
Yeah, probably so. Maybe it was shot to be unnerving because the whole plot of the storyline, overarching storyline, is just unnerving energy.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think it was meant to catch you off guard a little bit on the first one. So what did you think of the first one? And then I'm going to super, super nerdy pick on something in it.
Okay, so the first one, that's the one that takes place in the mall.
Yes.
And they're it's 1994, and it's the mask killer, yes. Right? The Crimson Ghost, if you will.
Yeah.
That's what I was like, basically. Oh. Yeah, I was like, that's the Crimson Ghost. I dug it. I thought it was fun. I thought it was fast-paced. Didn't feel like I was watching that long of a movie.
And they are like they clock in at close to 2 hours each.
Yeah. I felt that the introducing like starting off with like a slasher aspect and then bringing in this whole witch aspect to it and a town curse, learning about how it was originally called Union and then it split up into Shadyside versus Sunnyville or Dale or whatever, and now the people in the Sunny area were all like, oh, we're all optimistic and friendly and positive and progressive and blah blah blah, and people in like Shadyville are like, we eat our own poo.
I like that. That summary.
But the thing I love about it is, these are based on teenage stories. So it's all like us versus them. It's like our school versus their school. Like, yeah. We can't let the Shadysiders, one up us at the football game. We can't let the Somervillians,
And that's the way the book is. Yeah. Like, I only read one. But I read the first book, and these aren't the characters from the book, but it's the overarching story of the book. The witch and the curse and all that, and the two towns against each other. That's the overarching story of it. Then each book is a different set of characters and a different slasher killer. But that's very much the way it is. Like, somebody will get a slasher murder scene, and then they're like, but homecoming's tomorrow, and we gotta beat those Shadysiders. Yeah. And it's just like, well, that's a weird transition. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I dug it. I dug the first one. My problems are with all come into the third movie because, like, in my opinion, you're telling a story. So, like, my problem is with the third act and why that's the third act and not something else.
I think this is where I actually really liked the idea, especially we've become an ADD culture and a binge watching culture and things like that. So I actually like the idea of not having to wait a year or 2 years between movies and getting them all in at one shot like that. And they're already talking about more, of course. So
right, because it was mildly successful. Yeah.
Right, and there's 150 books, so there's plenty of material to mine from. They're out of shit to talk about. One of my problems with it, though, was I feel like I liked the idea of working backwards to kind of tell the overarching story, but I feel like story-wise, the third movie just wasn't strong enough to tentpole the first two.
Yeah. I agree with you.
And then there's the casting.
Yeah, well, I didn't know who any of the casts were, so I wasn't like I swear that the Nurse B, that they were getting their perks and everything. And I did like that they showed, like, kids go to the hospital. They have a nurse friend in the ER, and that did happen in the 90s.
I did like that in every movie, the kids just wanted to get high and fuck.
Yeah, that's it.
Because that actually made it feel like a real slasher franchise to me. Because that was one of my big problems is like, all right, so, because, it is a franchise. There's three of them, even though it was an instant franchise. There is three movies now.
Hey, when a mama franchise has some movies going on, and a production company comes along and picks it up. That's that production company's franchise too.
But I was worried because this would be the first kind of new, like, big budget for what it is, slasher franchise post Me Too. And I was like, how is that going to be translated? Yeah. Nope, they get high and fuck, just like old school slasher movies. And that's my favorite part of it, actually.
Side note, favorite part, we talked about this before, bread slicer kill.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I saw that. I was like, yes.
So good.
And anyway, the funny thing is, I went to, when I was at work today, I went to one of the guys in the bakery, and I was like, hey. I was like, I know what you're thinking. Tony, you never come back here. Why the hell are you talking to me? Do you have Netflix? No. Go find someone on Netflix. Watch Fear Street. You don't like horror movies? Fine. But watch Fear Street. Someone gets killed with what you use every day, a bread slicer. I know right now you're thinking, I would like to put your head in said bread slicer, but you're not going to. But you can watch someone get their head put in a bread slicer and think of me while it happens.
There's a lot of kills in the movies. Like, the body count is decent.
Oh, body count. I was not upset about the kills.
A lot of the kills are just stab kills, which is fine. I don't mind that. But I do feel like we do get a few, like, big over-the-top kills, too, which I really appreciate it. The bread slicer is my favorite.
Bread slicer is my favorite. But, again, we also both worked in bakeries, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so true. That, like, we've probably envisioned that in our head. Like, yeah. Or, like, that was one of the things, like, I really don't want to use that unless I absolutely have to. Because I can hurt myself. What else? I like the deaths. I thought, again, we were just talking, the deaths were great. Outside the first, no, what was your beef with the first movie?
Not too much with the first movie. So it's kind of a nitpicky thing, and this bothers me in a lot of things, and I've talked about it before. When you're doing a period movie and you don't use period music for it, like they used 90s music.
Yeah.
94, yeah. Like, in an early scene, he's singing a White Zombie song that came out in, like, 95 or 96 or something like that. And then later in the movie, there's late 90s music in a couple of parts. That kind of stuff bothers me. And I know it's, like, a weird nitpicky thing.
No, but you're making a movie about 94. Like, there's,
Like, it wasn't Fear Street 1990s.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't label it a specific year, you could have gotten away with that.
Yeah.
But because you put a specific year on it, now
this just happens every couple decades, you know. Like, and
You put a specific year on it, so I'm going to nitpick the '90s music. And so my stage wife was just in a show that takes place in the '90s, and I didn't nitpick the music for it. Like, I didn't really double check it, but I think they did the same thing. But what they did that was a little bit different is they're not the original songs; they're re-recordings of these mellow, heroin strung out acoustic versions of them. So kind of was a little bit different. So I didn't nitpick it as much.
How do you do mellow, acoustic, strung out heroin music more mellow and more acoustic? Because I just like,
more heroin-y.
I was just in my head. I was like trying to, like, all I can say is that my life. And I'm like, hearing that song, I'm like, oh. And why do chicks love that guy? I don't get that.
No.
Shannon Moon, was that who?
Yeah,
that?
Shannon Hoon.
What?
I never. He was on a Guns N' Roses album.
When they use Your Illusions, right?
Yeah, he sang back up on a couple songs.
But, like, I don't get the. That's okay. That's great. But I don't get, like, chicks dug that guy, man.
That's all I got for him.
Okay. It was on the Guns N' Roses. Oh, they just know that.
I would assume that's got to be it. Nothing against Blind Melon, but that is literally the only Blind Melon song I know.
Same.
Yeah. So I don't know what the rest of their stuff sounds like. Other than he sang back up on a couple Guns N' Roses songs.
So the first movie, fun. Again, introduce you to the whole story about the witch and the hand and being severed and, you know, finding the body, laying the body to rest, which I thought was great. Again, the cast, the kids that they get together, they all have great chemistry. They, you know, again, they just want to drink and fuck. That's easy.
Yeah. And I loved that it was that kind of old school slasher vibe.
Now, the second movie. I feel a lot of the story was already established, so you could probably just jumped into the slasher end of it.
That's fair.
But because I felt like it took too long to get to the slasher part.
I agree with that. I feel like from a story perspective, I definitely know what you're talking about, because they do talk to one of the characters as an adult, and she already recounted part of this.
Yeah.
So they're kind of just going back over something you've already heard, like Tony was saying. I feel like it's all there just to set up what was meant to be a twist of which character you're actually following.
Right. And yeah. after the movie played out, I agree with you to that extent. But at the same time, I'm just like, because like get to the guy. Get to the axe and the hood and just going around. And then I was upset because he wasn't hooded until like they put the thing around. And it wasn't like he was disfigured or anything like that.
No, just gets stuck to his face.
Just gets stuck to his face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a little bit of a letdown. No. But his first kill is great. Again, going back to
some what was the first kills. Kill?
He axes the guy's face in half.
Oh yeah.
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 Like he hits him in the head with it and you think he's down, but once he's on the ground, he just keeps going and chops through his face.
Yeah.
Like bisecting just his face. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Again, there's some good. Most of the kills are just kind of stabbing kills, which is fine. I have no problem with that.
No, that was a good one.
And that's a standard slasher kind of trope, but you get a couple of standout kills like that.
What else? Yeah, I felt it took a little too long to get there. And then, like, when you got into nuts and bolts of it, then you start learning the witch story, and you get into, like, her cabin, and, you know, you get into, like, you know, you start exploring that. That was really cool. I really dug all that. I dug that the school nurse had already, like, peeped what was going on. And
yeah, I liked the way they tied all that together.
And she was like, no, you're going to, Miss Lane, no, you don't understand. She's like, no, you don't understand. This motherfucker's going to die tonight. He's going to kill a bunch of people. I'm trying to stop it right now. All I'm trying to do. Which, I guess, from that perspective, if you kill him before it's possessing him, I guess that, you know, does it. But it was also really cool to see him, like, going through the motions of, like, their color day and him just be like, yeah, I'm camp counselor. Yep, I have this massive headache. Yep, probably hangover.
I also like that he kills kids in it, too.
Yeah, I have small children, so like, right. I'm a little more empathetic to it than this day and age. But I remember looking at the computer project going, huh. They kill kids.
They full-on kill the kids. Yeah. So that's a thing. A lot of these camp slasher movies, it's usually the camp counselors who are in danger. Rarely are the kids killed.
Yeah, Sleepaway Camp's
one of the few. Yeah. Yeah, where you actually see the kids get killed. But this goes for it. He kills
curling
one of the kids.
Curling iron death.
He kills one of the kids pretty quick.
Yeah, dude with glasses gets it right away.
Gets it right away.
Yep.
Yeah, so I was like, nice.
Yeah, and that part redeemed itself a little bit for me. Again, inventive kills, story's moving along good, plot's doing good, and then, you know, you get the reveal of that it's, you know, the girl who we think it is the whole time, the preppy sister, it's really the obnoxious sister, the girl from Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Each of these has actors from Stranger Things in it as well, because Netflix.
Yeah. Well, that's but that's their in-house people.
Like, yeah, you know exactly. Like, You're gonna go to the people that you like to work.
Hey, we the obnoxious little.
Not only that, but this was directed by the wife of the creator of Stranger Things.
There you go.
Directed these three movies. So.
That okay.
So you were definitely gonna get Stranger Things people in it.
Yeah. So that's the end. That you know they end up foiling.
I did like the reveal of which character, but I do think that's why we got the kind of retread in the beginning to really make you feel like you were following
the other character. Led to believe that the obnoxious sister is the one that gets
killed.
But that's the obnoxious sister is the one you're actually following the whole time. Who has a relationship, like quasi-relationship with the sheriff in 1994.
Yes.
But when they're teenagers in 78. Yeah. And that's an important thing to pay attention to. Because when we get to the third movie.
Spoilers.
Yeah. Spoilers. Because, like, you know, and the cool thing is, like, we find out that, like, not only are you being hunted by whatever killer's after you at this moment in time, over time, the other killers are summoned as well to help finish the job.
Which I liked.
I thought that was cool, too. And another
cool thing for future sequels, because they can always just bring some of those killers back.
Yeah.
That were more popular.
Or tell more of those tales, yeah.
Yeah.
Which. I know, I'm not sure if you're a fan of this movie. I'm a fan of this movie. I thought it was really good because I know, and it, honestly, a lot of the kids I worked with at the sandwich shop I used to manage, they really reinforced, like, I could clearly tell there was a generational thing with this movie in me, and I rewatched it and I appreciated it. The 13 Ghosts remake.
Yes. Yeah.
I got that kind of a vibe off this because, like, you have all these tales of all these murderers and this, that, or the other, and they're all coming after this one thing. Which is the blood of Samantha Fur? No, whose blood were they going after in the? They're going after Homegirl. Homegirl had the hand.
Right.
Yeah.
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 It's whoever they're attracted to, the blood of whoever is on the verge of uncovering the secret of the town.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And they had the hand. And then when they went to go find the body wasn't there. They dug up the rock, and the rock was like, the witch will live forever, or something like that. And then that's when you find out the one sister gets killed, and then I guess the rest of the monsters dissipate, and whatever. But then we find out later on, we're brought into the witching hour, the witch itself of the colony, where, you know. What another idea?
This is where the problems start.
Yeah, this is where the problems start. You know, because you know they go off.
I still liked it. I still liked three.
Three too. My problem with three
is
problems. It does have problems.
Yeah.
Although it reinforces a shirt I want to make for us. You know, that sounds like witch talk. Because yeah. Instead of like, I'll send you to the moon. That sounds like witch talk.
I'm going to use that.
Yeah. Don't. They get mad.
Can you go do this? That sounds like witch talk.
Yeah.
Get a lighter out.
What are you doing? I say that. I get this look, and then all of a sudden, like, I feel like I'm being broken apart from the inside. And that feels like witch talk.
I was going to say, like a witch would do, yeah. You would say?
Yeah, so, like, the girl who's been the protagonist is, you know, that's... was a protagonist in 1994, the girl that had the lesbian encounter, that's Forbidden Love, and is trying to, now by this time, her girlfriend is possessed by, her girlfriend's supposed to be the next killer.
Right.
And she's keeping her shackled so that this doesn't happen. But now she's been mind-tripped into 1666 by the witch. And... now she has to walk that day in the witch's shoes to find out exactly what happened.
Right.
And we see all the familiar townsfolk and townspeople.
Which I was fine with this premise.
Yeah. I like it when those things happen. When you have a flash, like, for example, Back to the Future, when they went back in time, it was their parents and everyone looked like their parents or their kids or something like that.
This is where it got problematic for me. One of them.
Yeah.
So there's a miscasting issue here, first off. I understand reusing a bunch of the cast because, again, they're trying to tie them all together. So it's meant to be the ancestors of the current people. I get that. But you end up, and it's no fault of the actors, but you end up a little bit of Keanu Reeves and Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Oh, that's right away. I looked at the incubator project and I went, yo, that girl is no Winona Ryder. All right. She's not that good of an actress. She's not going to be able to do this.
Yeah. So, and it's not their fault. Like they were, because those same actors and actresses were great in the first two.
Yes.
And they're just not those types of actors. And then it makes it even weirder, which a few people have pointed out. You do get flashes of Sarah Fear and the other townspeople in the other movies played by different actors. So now it creates a weird continuity thing as well. On top of it, that's a little more nitpicky, but I get it. I get why people didn't like that. But for me, it was the crazy miscasting. And then... there is a thing that's been happening with Netflix that people have been complaining about. I'm not sure I'm allowed to talk about it or how much I'm allowed to talk about it as a white guy. But people have been accusing Netflix of what they're calling brownwashing, which is trying to make historical things look more diverse than they were.
Ah.
And that definitely happens in this. And I understand why people of color are upset, because... I hear that early American settlements weren't super welcoming to people of different cultures. And maybe not everybody was on the same level footing they seemed to be in this town. So by pretending that slavery and racism didn't exist, I feel like that's as offensive as showing that stuff, or worse.
Right.
If that makes sense. So I read a couple of articles where people lashed out at this for that, and it's a Netflix thing, and they all pointed that out. And it's funny because the person I live with was watching a period drama on Netflix that came out that was really popular a few months ago, and I watched maybe like 15 minutes of an episode, and it's like the Victorian era, and it's like a wealthy black guy being pressured to marry this white girl, And I was like, I don't think this played out this way in history. Like, I'm pretty sure this didn't go down this way. Like,
unless the plot
I'm
was
kind of offended for black people.
Oh, right unless now. The plot of it was the wealthy black person is going to marry the affluent black person marries the white girl, and the white girl's family tries to kill the wealthy black person to get his wealth.
No, that wasn't.
I'm just saying, but yeah. I would buy that if that was the plot.
Yeah. Then you're like, all right, that sounds like white people back then.
That's what white people do.
Yeah. But apparently this has been, and again, I didn't watch any of these other period dramas. So like, I wasn't aware that this was happening, but apparently there have been people who are getting very upset by Netflix over inclusion in these period dramas because they're now just outright ignoring racism and slavery and things like that. And just pretending that didn't
So what
happen.
Are we supposed to do as a country, Mike? Well, that's just, they don't want us teaching racism in school and they don't want you brainwashing the movies now. What are we supposed to do?
But I get it. Like, and again, I can't be offended, I guess, because it's not.
That's why we need
me.
To do movies about Santeria.
There you go. Yeah. I'm all for that.
Yeah.
But like, it's not about me, but
Cuban
I get
mysticism.
Their point. What they're talking about, complaining about that. Like, because I thought that watching it, I was like, wow, these people are really not racist considering, you know, everything I know about history. And there doesn't seem to be any slaves or anything considering everything I know about history. Like,
well, as you know,
and again, I understand this is a slasher.
History
franchise.
Is told by a very specific narrative. And yeah. Like that, none of that happened. And that was all yeah. made up. Yeah.
I'm waiting for the World War II movie that doesn't have the Holocaust. Netflix is like, no, it's cool.
Yo, okay, so I know. Hold on, because before we get into the nuts and bolts of this, the plot of this movie, real quick. So, conspiracy theories. You brought them up. That is not me this time. That is something coming. Okay, I thought it was like, sometimes my music starts on my phone.
Oh no.
Yeah. Okay. What was I? Oh yeah. So I know you're into good conspiracy theory. Have you ever come across a conspiracy theory that everything we learned about World War II is absolutely wrong, and that Hitler is the protagonist and was trying to save the world from its inclusion of the world banks because the world banking system was eventually going to destroy the world?
I mean, I haven't specifically seen that, but I like bits and pieces of that sound familiar, if that makes sense.
Oh my God. That is like, when you find that one, read up everything you can because they take that down right away.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, going back to Caligula and fisting.
Jesus.
As one does. So, like, the Caligula thing, the whole idea behind the Caligula movie and the way that project started off was Caligula was originally written in history as, like, a psychotic person. And that's not the case, as we know now. Like, a lot of the stuff he did was crazy, but it was all done for his political gain.
Right.
Ultimately. In the end. So, and even the stuff that seems the most insane, like pointing his horse to the Senate and things like that. Well, it's because he needed somebody who the senators would like shadow the leader, and they all wanted to kill him. So the only way to defend himself, because he couldn't make any of them his top advisor because they would murder him. The first chance they got, he made his horse his top advisor because his horse isn't going to murder him the second he turns his back. Things like that. So that's where the idea for the movie originally started. So I do think, you know, history is written, obviously, with a certain bent to it. Not that I think Hitler was a good guy, but that sounds like a Netflix movie that might be coming out soon.
Yeah. I see so many things and I'm like, jeez. Well, it's funny because, like, then, like, but then you have these conspiracy theory guys that, like, you know, like, for example, I have an African-American friend on social media who's Catholic, for one, and is very devout, which I...
Did you throw the church burning thing
I did, and he said that's not what the church is about. I'm like, well, no, that's not... It
kind
is.
Of is, though.
Kind of is.
I mean, based on facts.
But this person's always posting about, I'm going live to tell you about what's really going on, about the Arctic Circle, but they're going to shut me down because they don't want me talking about it. You know, the hidden four continents behind the wall of Antarctica.
Okay, I was going to say, what's going on in the Arctic Circle? But, I've heard of that before. Though,
yeah. And like, but he's always posting things like this. And meanwhile, like, someone posted a random meme about the Tuskegee experiments, but he didn't know about this. I'm like, you're a black dude into conspiracy theories?
Yeah.
But you don't know actual fucking history?
Right.
Like, you have to read actual fucking history first before you get into conspiracy theories.
Right, that's not even a conspiracy theory.
That's just history. That happened.
That we just acknowledge happened.
And that's, like, I have a few African-American friends who are vaccine hesitant. I get it. I was like, They're like, oh, you're not really pressuring me to get the vaccine. I'm like, I get it. Like, what do you mean you get it? I'm like,
the government experimented on people who looked like you.
I was like, you weren't treated nice by the government, and they gave you all syphilis. Like, I'm not.
And that's why I understand, like, even as a white guy, like, it's not my place to comment on it. But I understand why these black critics are upset because, you know, slavery was real.
It was. It was a real thing.
Netflix. And I listen, these are slasher movies. They're not trying to be historically accurate or teach you anything. Because, again, they're about teens who want to get high and fuck, and then they get killed. They're not trying to teach you anything. But if you're going to set something in that time period, pretending that slavery never happened is not great.
Yeah.
So I get why they're mad.
So the whole origin of this, that's town's curse, because these kids want to trip their balls off.
Yeah. It really is. Again, go back. The main moral of these movies is kids just want to get high and fuck.
Yeah.
And I cannot remember her name, and I'm kicking myself for it, but Duffer's wife, because the Duffer brothers created Stranger Things.
Uh-huh.
Duffer's wife, good on you.
Yeah.
Thank you for making a trilogy of movies about people who just want to get high and fuck.
Yeah.
You really taught us we need to get back to true American values.
Yeah, true American horror.
Yeah.
Because the nuts and bolts, it's like, well, why did the curse start? So these kids wanted to get these magic berries from this witch. What? Yeah.
These kids wanted to trip balls and then fuck each other. You know, like I do right now.
Yeah. So they end up going to this witch's place, a Raider Shack. The one, the girl that's transported back in time that's in the body of Samantha Fear. Because the whole curse is of Samantha Fear. The witch is Samantha Fear. The whole town is built upon this curse of Samantha Fear. Patsy. Yeah, I said it. You find out that, so they run into this witch's house and Samantha Fear starts reading one of the books. And the actual witch is like, hey, but don't do that. You don't want to open up the doorway to the dark one. And she's like, you know what, you're right. I don't know what I'm doing. I should leave. And she does. Excuse me. Ooh. All right. A bit of the old gas. Sorry. Anywho. So they leave. They get the berries. They start eating them. And then Samantha has a thing for the reverend's daughter.
Yeah.
Sorry, the pastor's daughter. Not reverend. Pastor. I don't, the religious folk's daughter.
Yeah.
I don't know the hierarchy. The
guy's daughter.
He's not Catholic. There's no hats.
He has a daughter.
Yeah. So, he has a daughter, so he can't.
That everybody's cool with him having.
Yeah, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like illegitimate. But she hangs around Samantha and they were getting romantically involved. And the townsfolk find out about it. But then around that same time, all the crops and everything start dying. So they're like, look, you girls being immoral is causing our village to die. Union is dying because of your immoralness. So, like, we're going to burn you at the stake. I'm like, no, you can't do that because that's not what was happening. We didn't do anything, really. And like, no, we saw you. We all know it was you because it's all word of mouth. But at this time, we find out that this dude lives at the edge of town, Simon.
Yes.
And, he's of the good family. And
right, who we know from the previous
Who we know from the previous movies, the mayor of Sunnyvale and the sheriff of Sunnyvale and the camp counselors at Sunnyvale. The good family is synonymous with Sunnyvale. And he's just like, he lives away from these people because he's like, I can't stand them. You know, they're all toxic. They're all like, as soon as one person, they all judge everyone the moment anything happens. They accuse everyone of being guilty all the time. He's like, they're a bunch of assholes. I don't want to live with them.
Yeah, he seems woke for the time.
Yeah, he seems woke for the time. And I agree, but I agree with him, though.
Right.
Like, I'm like,
he's not wrong.
He's not wrong.
They prove him completely correct. Even though he doesn't turn out to be a protagonist.
No.
Yeah.
This guy here, he's
still
like,
correct.
This guy, like, yeah. This guy makes sense. I am all about this guy.
He's still not wrong.
Like, Samantha, like, when Samantha gets into some trouble, you're like, oh, go run to your friend Simon. He's going to solve everything for you because, like, you know, that's your dude. And she does. And we find out that because Samantha goes to the woods to find the witch again to take her book because she's going to invoke the Dark One to help cleanse the land. And, you know, because she thinks that's going to help everything. And then we find out that that's not the case and that the witch is dead and that while all this is going on, the town's clergy, there we go, there's the word.
Yeah.
The town's clergy has rounded up all the kids and brought them into the church and cut out all their eyes.
More kid killing.
And proceeded to do a sermon. So, yeah. The townsfolk get mad and blame Samantha Fear.
Which is a scene that I loved, even though they're killed off screen. Again, more dead kids.
Yeah.
Because, again, no, it, that was, you that, don't see that a lot.
That, and I'm also finding out a scary thing. Like, eyeless kids terrify me now.
Does that come up a lot in everyday life? The kids are always popping their fucking eyes out. They're like, dead! And you're like, ah!
Well, no, no, okay. So around this time last year, the Incubator Project and I were watching The Strain.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'm not sure how far, if you've watched that or how far I got into that.
We didn't finish it. I think we were pretty far into it. How many seasons is it?
I think it's five.
So we were probably like four seasons into it then, if that's the case.
Okay.
And then we moved.
Yeah.
Like right as that happened and just never got back to it. At this point, I'd have to restart.
Yeah. We got halfway through season two.
Okay.
And it was only because like we were watching it, but like other things were coming on and it fell through the shuffle. Yeah. It was something we were paying attention to, but it was one of those things like, do you want to have a cocktail and watch something you don't have to pay attention to? Or do you want to watch something you want to pay attention to? And like, when you're raising two children after they go to bed, it's like, I want a cocktail.
So your kids came out, ripped their eyes out.
So the kids, but there's a scene where the special needs school bus driver,
yeah,
on the blind kids field trip, and then the vampire picks up the blind kids and converts them all into like those spider things.
Yeah.
So yeah, blind children scare the fuck out of me. Because like I'm so used to seeing kids with eyes all the time. Imagine kids with no eyes. It's just not used to seeing kids with eyes.
It's the best sentence. I see kids with eyes. They're fucking everywhere.
You never see a kid with no eyes. And if you do, he's wearing sunglasses, so you don't know.
How often does that come up where you see kids with ripped out eyes just walking around?
So they're terrified. Not to mention that if the parents go into the room, and I can only imagine like what it'd feel like if I looked, came in a room and like I saw my kids with their eyes ripped out, I'd lose my shit too, and like watching people lose eyes. It tugs at the heartstrings, you know? And that's what's good about horror. It prepares you.
And it's
for
in things. A church, yeah. And you got the pile of eyes in the aisle, yeah, and everything.
You're going to burn it down, find out there was also already bodies of the Native Americans that lived there.
Yeah. There's thousands of dead indigenous kids, but hey, slavery didn't exist.
So we find out that the witch is dead. And then Simon's like, yeah, about that, I had to go kill the witch. And they're like, what do you mean you had to go kill the witch? She's like, well, I needed her book. Well, why'd you need her book? Oh, I had to awaken the Dark One. Why'd you awaken the Dark One? Well, I made a deal. I'm going to be prosperous. My family will always be prosperous. And this town's going to suffer. And my family's going to just live because they're all insufferable pricks anyway. So that's their bed. They're going to lay in it. And I'm just going to rule them and be good because I'm good. So, like, good was evil.
Yes. You know? Yeah, there was a review I saw of this, and I wish I had written down the person's name so I could properly attribute this to them, but he hated 3 and was just going on a rant about it, and he was like, the worst part of it, he's like, I love the whole idea that the good family is really evil and sold their souls to prosper, and that every, you know, few years or whatever, they need to sacrifice people, and they do this through the slasher movie thing. He's like, I love all of that. He's like, but you're telling me they went through all of this generations of murder and selling their souls to be a small town cop?
Yeah.
He's like, I would have aimed way fucking higher.
So I just think that their family would always be prosperous.
Right.
So they're like the good family. It's like his brother was the mayor as well. You know, so like I get what you're saying. Like you did all this to be a small time cop. Like you did all this for this. Like you've murdered like time and time again. But it's like, you know, it's just a few people here or there, you know. So the thing I did not like, and it wasn't until the Incubator Progeny pointed it out, like, I wanted more, we wanted more of the good side of things.
Oh, that's a good point.
Like, all right, because as soon as you find out that it's him, it cuts back to 1994.
Right.
And she comes back and she's like, we got to take out the current good. And here's how we got to do it, because we find out that, like, you know, the bones are buried in a different spot. And they do that. They go and they lay Samantha Fear to rest, and they're like, yay, we did that. But because this is all a blackmail job, this guy's, the whole curse was put on Samantha Fear, Fire, whatever her name is. The whole curse was put on her, and they used that as the thing for the curse. And every few years, oh, it's just her curse acting up again, and our town really celebrates that because Sunnydale does really good, and Shady eats their own poop.
I love that assessment of it. Stu Downs, one's doing great, the other one eating shit. So anyway.
But like that's how they set everything.
You ever see kids without eyes?
Kids with eyes creep me out, man. Leave me alone. There's very few things that scare me.
That's gonna be another great shirt too. Kids without eyes creep me out.
Kids without eyes creep me out. You know what one of the scariest noises to hear is? A child's laughter. Especially if you don't have any children. You're just laughing kids? That's terrible.
No, kids can be terrifying. Oh, yeah. The things that they say, yeah.
Sometimes Michael just looks at me a certain way, and I'm like, are we okay? Is there something going on upstairs you didn't know about?
I got really, really sick once. Like, high fever, like, deliriously sick. And I don't get sick often, so when I do... What's wrong?
No, there's an abundance of cop cars going down the street.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
I'm just, make sure everyone's okay.
So...
The call came from inside the house.
I don't get sick often, but when I do, like, I tend to get hit hard. Like, I don't just get, like, the sniffles.
You got COVID.
Yeah, I get COVID. So, this was a few years ago, and I was sick, and the bigger one, who was still smaller at that time, I fell asleep on a chair, and I woke up, and I felt, like, this pressure on me, and I was like, oh, shit, am I, like, dying or something? I look up, he's sitting perched on me like a gargoyle. Yeah, and I was like, dude, what's wrong? He's just like staring directly at me. I'm like, what's happening? What's wrong? He's like, I'm watching you. I was like, why? What the fuck is happening? And he's just like, well, when I'm sick, you take care of me, so I'm taking care of you. And he meant, like, this is incredibly... When you wake up from a fucking fever dream,
yeah,
and there's a child perched on your chest like a gargoyle staring in your eyes... Terrified.
So 2 weeks ago, I was kind of ill, as were you.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the days, it was a little rough, and I was taking a nap that my son had. You know, I took a nap, like a little quick little nap on the couch, and he looks at me in the feet, like by my face, and he grabs me by my beard because that's the thing he likes to do. He's getting easier with it, but he just likes to grab me by that part of my face, and he puts his forehead into my forehead. And he looks me right in my eyes. He goes, I love you, Dad. I'm like, okay.
You say you love me or I'll fucking kill you right here.
I love you too, Mike. Chicks. So, overall, I dug Fear Street.
Yeah.
I thought it was good. I've read some things like, oh, it's too many things rolled into one. I'm like, what? It's Friday the 13th, The Exorcist, and It. It's My problem is we didn't really know what the Black Mass thing was going to become.
Yeah.
Like, that was one of the things that I was like, I would have liked more on that. Like, what would have happened? Like, the good family's good for, like, you know, 13 generations. And then after the 13th one, the Black Mass would consume the town.
And that's why I hope they do make more. Yeah, I think it would be interesting if they do make more sequels. Do you think they should just do one at a time? Or do you want another block of films?
Another block of films. Because, like, I'm never going to sit down and be like, you want to watch this one? Like, you know, like, when the kids are older and stuff like that, when I can watch this bullshit, I'm watching it all after, like, one afternoon. That's like, you know, something you start at noon on a Sunday, like after church.
Knock out all three
before dinner. You make meatballs that day from scratch with that play in the background. Family entertainment.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We're in the moon. Oh my God, a death by bread slicer. All coming right into the kitchen. Oh, there it is. Awesome. All right, Jason, let me know when, you know, they cut that person's face off. All right. I'm going to go back and make these meatballs. That's how it's going to go.
Yeah.
Good times.
It is good times. Yeah. I enjoyed it, though, overall.
I did, too.
Third one's a little flawed. And again, though, I still liked it.
I thought it wrapped up good. But I wanted more of, like, you know, like, instead of stopping there and then going to 1994, why didn't they stop there and then show, like, you know, good giving it to, like, the transition. Like, oh, by the way, the reason why we have things so good.
Yeah, like, that would be interesting. And that could be a cool
sequel. Because they played with that for, like, a second. Mm-hmm. Because on 78, he's like, you know, I don't really want to be this. I don't really want to do this. And she's like, yeah, well, you know, I don't really want to do what I do either, but this is what we do in life. Like, and he was telling her, like, in a roundabout way, like, I don't want you to die. I like you.
Right.
I'm trying to keep you alive. You're special to me. And
that would be interesting if the next one we get is from the good family perspective.
Yeah. I think that would be, no pun intended, a good series.
Yeah.
But yeah, I felt I wanted more of that. I wanted more explanation on that Black Mass.
Yeah, I pulse, I did want,
like,
more of that.
Because, like, it definitely grew over this 300 years. Like, you know, like, so what did it become?
Where was that going? Yeah.
What else? yeah, the deaths were good. Everything about it was good. Like I absolutely dug it. I was impressed. I was not, when I went into it, I was at first like, this is not going to be fun. It's going to feel like homework. I dug every part of it. I haven't watched Titans since we started this. Titans has been on the back burner because, you know, burned through that. But, yeah. Which it's settled my quench for violence that Titans apparently is, you know, because Titans is a very violent show. But on that note.
Yeah.
Check out the Rust Belt song Afar. It kicks ass.
Oh, it's a very good song.
I've listened to it about a half a dozen times today. What else? Yeah. What do you want to do next time?